Welcome to Audio Notes. I'm David Finkel, Artistic Director of Music at Menlo. Along with Artistic Co-Director Wu Han, Artistic Administrator Patrick Castillo, and some of this season's festival artists, it is my pleasure to introduce you to Music at Menlo's 2010 season, Maps and Legends. In 2004, the festival's second season, we embarked on a musical odyssey with stops in five singular musical regions. This season, we expand on that journey to explore music from a spectrum of remarkable times and places, from the rich musical traditions of Vienna, England, and Spain, to Dvorak's America, 1920s Paris, and beyond. Maps and Legends will offer listeners many layers of context in which to engage with a broad spectrum of great music. This season's audio notes are designed to illuminate some of these layers. Over the course of this summer's concerts, encounters, and other festival events, we'll only continue to discover more of the innumerable connections that make the chamber music literature so rich. One of the many exceptional qualities that music has demonstrated throughout history is its capacity to act as an agent of cross-cultural exchange. This first installment of Audio Notes 2010 takes us through three of this summer's programs which demonstrate this phenomenon in different ways. Concert Program 1, The Seasons, pairs two composers who occupy vastly different worlds, the Italian Baroque and the modern American avant-garde, but whose music finds common inspiration in nature and the changing of the seasons. This summer's sixth concert program, Spanish Inspirations, looks at the influence that Spain's composers had on their counterparts elsewhere throughout Europe during the early 20th century. Finally, the season ends in Dvorak's America, where we'll hear the folk songs and spirituals that the Czech romantic Antonín Dvořák discovered upon traveling to the United States in 1892, as well as two of his own signature chamber works inspired by the tunes that he heard. While our first program this summer presents an unexpected pairing of composers both inspired by the changing of the seasons, our sixth program, Spanish Inspirations, looks at another more specific facet of music serving as a bridge between cultures. This program explores the influence of one country's music on the composers of another. We'll hear music by three of Spain's preeminent composers around the turn of the 20th century: Isaac Albéniz, Joaquín Turina, and Manuel de Falla, composers who cultivated an unmistakably Spanish flavor in their music by drawing from flamenco and other folk styles and integrating them within a Western classical framework. Alongside these composers, we'll hear music by two composers very strongly associated with their own cultures, the French composers Claude Debussy and Maurice Ravel, who were deeply seduced by the music of their Spanish counterparts, and integrated some of what they heard from the Iberian Peninsula into their own music.
Spanish Inspirations begins with music by Isaac Albéniz and Manuel de Falla. Albéniz lived from 1860 to 1909. During his lifetime, he was equally renowned as a composer and as a piano virtuoso. Today, he remains primarily known for his large catalog of piano music. His piano pieces skillfully combine elements of Spanish folk music with a romantic virtuosity reminiscent of Liszt and Chopin. Manuel de Falla, 16 years Albéniz's junior, is perhaps the most important Spanish musician of the 20th century. Like Albéniz, Falla integrated Spanish folk elements with broader developments that he absorbed from the music of other leading composers of the day. He was especially drawn to the French modernists and became enamored with the music of Debussy, whose own ear for Spanish music we'll discuss later on this program. Although Albéniz is best known as a composer for the piano, We'll hear some of his music on that most quintessentially Spanish of instruments, the guitar, in arrangements by guitarist Jason Vio. This summer, Jason offers a set of three Albanese pieces, each taken from larger multi-movement piano works: Sevilla, from the composer's Suite Española of 1886, Mallorca, a movement from Albanese's Opus 101 piano cycle bearing the French title Rev, and Torre Bermeja, one of Albanese's 12 character pieces, Opus 92. Jason Vio.
Their piano works arranged for guitar. Yeah.
They're your arrangements.
Yes, I mean, you know, basically, a couple of them. The Tarraga arrangements are great, and then Segovia did some arrangements as well, which are excellent of certain pieces by Albanese and Granados. You know, and then everybody kind of puts their own little spin on them, but you never really stray too far from that original. It's like you don't want to reinvent the wheel. Reportedly, he approved of the guitar transcription form of a lot of these pieces that Francisco Tarraga was doing. When you hear them on the piano, you hear all this imitation of guitar kind of things, the falsetas, you know, the fast scales that you would hear on a guitar. Just that articulation, that real tight kind of heavily articulated scales and that sort of thing, I think are an imitation of the guitar. And then also the sort of the rasgueado flourishes, the strumming kind of effects that you would do with the right hand with the fingernails. Yeah, for example, what's a good example? Like the falsetas, you know. See, in the piano, you'd play something like, when you hear that on the piano, you hear this, like that. But see, in guitar, you can really get it to where you're going. On the piano, about all you can get to, you know, to finish that section, I'm basically sort of approximating, like that. Maybe you could roll that chord on the piano to get that across. But in the guitar, you just have a color palette that you don't have, like on, you know, and an articulation palette too, that's very unique to the guitar. And so you can really kind of put these pieces more in their, well, their rightful place. There's that rasgueado. Hear that? That's being done with the back of my nails, essentially. Like, it's not even really a classical guitar technique. It's used in flamenco all the time as a rhythmic and a textural item, but that gives it just the right, you know, spirit. You couldn't make that sound on the piano. Also, a lot of the basic rhythms, the basic dance rhythms that he's writing on are malagueñas, boleros. They're like Spanish folk dances that would have been accompanied by a street guitarist, you know, just people, you know, because the country for so many years has just been full of people that play guitar. The guitar is like in virtually every household, you know. It's just that's the national instrument. What I'm playing it's a fusion, actually. It's a really perfect fusion of a classical composer using the folk elements of his native Spain and just bringing a little bit of that into the fold. You know, it's a great fusion of folk music or popular music, music of the people, if you will, and the music of this, you know, for the stage, music that is meant to be listened to, right. Quietly listened to.
My Manuel de Falla composed his Siete Canciones Populares Españolas, or Seven Spanish Folk Songs, in 1914. The songs are settings of popular Spanish texts. As with the Albania selections, these songs have lent themselves over the years to the tradition of arranging the music of Spanish classical composers for the guitar. This summer, we'll hear these songs in Jason Vio's arrangements. Jason Vio.
Siete Canciones Populares Españolas, originally for voice and piano. Emilio Pujol was the guitarist in the middle of the 20th century that did probably the most well-known guitar arrangement of those pieces. And again, you kind of use those as a base, but everybody kind of makes their own embellishments on it. And they work great, again, they work great with guitar because they sound like they were written for guitar, because like the Nojota and the polo at the end, the seventh song, that has a great deal of anger from the singer's perspective. And you can just really tear into those rasgueados. You can apply all of the guitaristic, if you will, elements that he's trying to get across with the piano writing. So you can just do it on the guitar, you know, and get it across right away. We can just have like a rasgueado chord in a lot of those instances, and it sounds fantastic. You know, the first chord of Jota, that brings the listener right to Spain. Definitely. Asturiana, the slow one, absolutely gorgeous. That is, like, without a doubt, my favorite. The singer sings a very slow developing melody, and it repeats a lot. And then you get these octave ostinato in the guitar. That's the only thing that's really accompanying the singer at that time. Not a lot of harmonic movement. It's very static and kind of on one chord. And then at the end, the piece sort of like harmonically opens up a little bit and goes more into another chord. The piano gets a little bit of a melodic treatment and actually closes the piece by, well, in this case, the guitar closes the piece.
If you'd like to hear more of my conversation with Jason, you can listen online by visiting www.musicatmenlo.org/multimedia and clicking on Audio Notes Outtakes. This is a new feature we're offering this season, so please check it out. Audio Notes Outtakes includes more conversations with this summer's festival artists, with insights and anecdotes that there just isn't enough room for on these discs. The outtakes of my discussion with Jason go more specifically into the harmonic characteristics of Falla's music that give it its unique Spanish essence, complete with Jason demonstrating on his guitar. Again, that's online at www.musicatmenlo.org/multimedia. Click on Audio Notes Outtakes. Alongside the music of Albéniz and Falla, as well as their countryman, the Spaniard Joaquín Turina, Spanish Inspirations presents music by two seminal composers from France, Claude Debussy and Maurice Ravel. Debussy was born in 1862 and died in 1918. Ravel was the younger of the two. He lived from 1875 to 1937. Debussy and Ravel were the leading proponents of an early 20th century musical aesthetic that's become known as Impressionism, a term borrowed from the visual arts, and specifically the work of the painter Claude Monet. As a musical term, Impressionism refers to the rich palette of harmonic colors and instrumental timbres that characterize Debussy's and Ravel's music, and which we now think of as a specifically French sound. While they're both known for having cultivated a distinctly French style, the Frenchness of Debussy's and Ravel's music is only one aspect of their compositional language. Both composers had insatiably open ears and absorbed a broad spectrum of musical styles, from American jazz to Indonesian gamelan. As we'll hear, this penchant for a variety of musical cultures also included a visceral draw to the music of Spain. Debussy is universally recognized as one of the most influential musical voices of the 20th century. To the ears of many music lovers, his landmark work of 1894, Prelude to the Afternoon of a Faun, represents the beginning of a new era in music. The composer and conductor Pierre Boulez wrote that with this work, quote, "the art of music began to beat with a new pulse," end quote.
The String Quartet in G minor, Opus 10, dates from early 1893, 1 year prior to the completion of Prelude to the Afternoon of a Faun. Both works signal the onset of the composer's early maturity and the so-called Impressionist style.
The association of Debussy with Impressionism is one that is fraught with controversy.
Jupiter String Quartet cellist Daniel McDonough.
Debussy himself actually wanted to associate more with the symbolist poets. But I think that you can't help but hear this kind of painterly aspect in his music. And the quartet itself actually tries to walk this fine line between the German style. I mean, it's entitled String Quartet in G minor, Opus 10, which is such a German way to title a piece. And he didn't even title any of his other pieces that way. And it's in four movements. And so everything about it is kind of structured in this kind of Germanic style. But still, he's beginning to reach towards these kind of impressionist washes, liquid kind of sounds that he would become so famous for. So the quartet kind of is at this breaking point, I think, in his music right before Prelude to the Afternoon of a Faun, where I think people said, well, this is Debussy's voice.
The French symbolist poet Stéphane Mallarmé once identified symbolism's ethos as follows, quote, "to evoke in a deliberate shadow the unmentioned object by elusive words," end quote. That mindset finds its musical analog in Debussy's quartet, whose surface character reflects the composer's sympathy with the symbolist writers. The quartet mystified listeners at its premiere. The work's unfamiliar tonal effects and fluid form represented a striking departure from the stalwart quartet canon of Beethoven and Brahms.
The reception of the premiere was mixed. People really didn't get what was going on. But in any case, the piece has come to be loved. And I think that Debussy had a huge respect for Beethoven, and people were always looking back to Beethoven's quartets as sort of the model. And he does something very Beethovenian in the piece, in that, like, the first theme of the first movement is really the germinal motive that the whole quartet comes from. That little turn at the very beginning is pervasive through all four movements. So, in a way, there's nothing more Beethovenian than that. I mean, taking this little bit of music and then making an entire 30-minute work out of it. Yeah, it's really interesting to see him kind of wrestling with trying to establish this new kind of French music, but being still stuck a little bit in the forms of Germany and Austria.
So if the form is still descended from that tradition, what about it sonically was so puzzling?
The kind of scales that Debussy was using, the tonalities. I mean, instead of using the traditional seven-note scale, you had octatonic scales and pentatonic scales, and that was Debussy's signature. And also, he looked to places like Spain for kind of inspiration of sound and tonality. For some reason, I always, when I hear the opening theme of the first movement, it always has this kind of Spanish flair to me. And people think of Debussy as being this very fluid and liquid, melodious music. And this is really kind of brusque, rhythmic music from the very beginning. And a lot of the quartet has that kind of rhythmic energy, which I think takes some people by surprise. It took me by surprise when I first heard the quartet.
Speaking of his ear for other cultures and the music of Spain, the thing that I hear is the scherzo movement with the guitar line.
Yeah, totally. And it's still got that triplet figure, that little kind of arabesque thing, you know. Dun, dee, dun, 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 dun. So even in the scherzo, it's still there, that kind of, it reminds me of like flamenco dancers with their castanets or something.
There's a part of Spain and France that is actually the same, and this is the Basque region. It's really one of my favorite parts in the world.
Pianist Alessio Bax.
You can call it their own country, but it's nor France nor Spain. And that's, sure, Ravel, with also Basque origins. I wrote a lot of music in the Basque styles. I mean, think of the trio and the Zortziko rhythm of the first movement, for example. So it was, of course, a French composer, but deeply rooted in the Basque tradition.
Ravel began composing his piano trio during the summer of 1913, which he spent near his birthplace in France's Basque region. Ravel's mother was also Basque, and throughout his life, Ravel felt a special affinity for this part of his heritage. His fondness of Spanish folk music and dance can be heard in the piano trio as well as in other works.
The peculiar rhythm that begins the piano trio's first movement derives from the Zortziko, a Basque folk dance. The Zortziko is characterized by its five-beat rhythm, in which the second and fourth beats are emphasized. Ravel adopts the hypnotic lilt of this dance form for the trio's first theme. The violin introduces the movement's second theme. The music retains its idiosyncratic gait, but at a slower tempo. The character of the Zortziko rhythm has been completely transfigured. Ravel continues to transform each of these themes in ingenious ways. Like Debussy's string quartet, this movement demonstrates strong craftsmanship. Using such economic means, just these two innocuous melodic ideas, Ravel manages to traverse broad emotive terrain. The second movement of the trio is another example of the influence of other cultures on Ravel's music. Ravel labeled the movement Pantoum, P-A-N-T-O-U-M, after a Malayan verse form called the Pantun, P-A-N-T-U-N. There is some scholarly debate as to how closely Ravel's music adheres, if at all, to the form of the Pantun. Ravel biographer R.B. Orenstein writes, quote, Ravel apparently wished to associate the movement's rhythmic subtleties with those found in the Malayan Pantun. Thus, one may note the spiritual imprint of the exotic rhythms heard at the 1889 International Exposition. End quote. Another scholar, Michael Tilmouth, calls Ravel's Pantun, quote, an ingenious synthesis of a musical equivalent of the verse form with that of the traditional scherzo and trio. End quote. Like the first movement, the Pantoum is marked by its idiosyncratic rhythmic pulse. The movement's melodic ideas also have an exotic flair. The third movement is a passacaglia, a form in which a melody repeats over and over again and is varied each time. The passacaglia is an old musical form rooted in 17th century Spain. The term comes from the Spanish pasacalle, from the words pasar, to walk, and calle, street. The piano introduces the contemplative melody in its deep bass register. Then the cello takes up the melody. Finally, the violin. The texture of the music grows increasingly rich. At the climactic point in the score, Ravel actually writes the piano part out on three staves. The gravity of the passacaglia is offset by the shimmering brilliance of the finale. The music's uneven rhythmic gait, set alternately in 5/4 and 7/4 meter, again evokes Basque folk music.